You are empathic, Abby. Please be using words like please. Be using words like dear, right? Speak to their emotions. Speak to people like you're speaking to your friend. Abby, come and buy what I said. Please, we don't want to be hungry.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Spotlight Podcast. This podcast is for curious minds and aspiring innovators. We dive deep to discuss inspiring, informative, and offbeat conversations on technology, business, product, and innovation to supercharge your career. I am your host, Iwalola Shoboale. I am a passionate advocate for insightful discussions that inspire change and growth. Welcome to the Spotlight Podcast. Today we have an amazing human being joining us on the episode. She's a marketing manager with over 6 years of work experience across AI, data, Web3, fintech, and e-commerce sectors. I'm especially excited about having her on the podcast today because she has such a unique background in software product management. So if you're excited to hear from a data-informed marketing manager, then this episode is for you. Welcome, Tochi. I am really, really, really thrilled to have you here. You look beautiful as always.
Thank you so much, Iwalola. And you look amazing. Really fresh. Really, really.
Hey.
This weather is doing something great with you.
It's not the weather. It's the grace of God. Because if you are thinking of the weather, you know, it's been so hot. I mean, your side of Lagos is not hot.
It's
been boiling.
They've been parboiling Nigeria. I don't know.
Honestly, like, I don't know who told them. What did we do to deserve this? Honestly, I don't know. Gosh, so if your brain is boiling like mine, I think this episode would be a great way for you to cool down, you know, catch up with an amazing person like Tochi and hear what she has to say about this industry. So before we get into the main topic of the day, I usually like to do an icebreaker, Tochi, where I ask you, you know, this or that questions, and you have to think fast on your feet and tell me which you prefer. Okay, so number one, Apple Vision Pro or the Ray-Ban Meta Smart Glasses?
Apple Vision Pro.
You're an Apple babe. Do you have
Apple babe.
Are you unbelievably liquid?
From like my mouth to God's ears, I am highly delulu, and the Lord makes it happen all the time.
So. Yes, love it, love it, love it.
I mean, I want to see the vision. I want to see the future. There's this hype around it. I mean, it's Apple. It's elite.
Mm-hmm.
It's exclusive. I love how they market their products. Mm-hmm. Creates that sense of, you know, fear of missing out. So you just want to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter how much people are criticizing it, you still want to experience it for yourself. So definitely Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah, and I think they've tapped into something about our generation. We don't want to miss out on anything. Like, we cannot miss out. We catch up with everything on TikTok or Snapchat, everything. Like, no. So they want to give us something to aspire to all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What did you think about the video that, I don't know if you saw the video that Mark Zuckerberg did, basically talking about how his own glasses are better than Apple's. Did you see that video?
I did not see it, but is that necessary?
So actually, he did it in a way where I don't think even Apple would feel offended or anything. Like, he did it it was so smooth. No, I was like, you wouldn't feel offended. You would just be like, okay, interesting, let me go and try it out. It was actually really smooth. If I can find the video, I'll share the link with you.
it's that workplace politics thing where you're getting shaded. But because it's coming out in a very diplomatic way, you don't know that you're currently being dragged.
That's it.
Right?
So it was very, very smooth. I need to get to that level where I can insult somebody and the person will feel like I was praising them. I need to get to that level, honestly.
No.
Okay, the next one. Chrome or Edge browser? Google Chrome or Edge?
Definitely Chrome, please.
Okay.
I don't... Microsoft gets it all for body.
But do you think Microsoft's making a comeback? I think with AI, they are. But what do you think?
I don't think so. I look at them as a really rigid brand.
Okay.
Because to have been in the forefront of technology, they should be doing better.
Mm.
Google serves maybe from this part of the world, but I'm of the opinion that Google serves the demographic of the layman. And let's be very honest, a lot of people are laymen when it comes to core technology.
Yeah.
Microsoft is too high end in terms of technologies. And we're even in a generation where people are getting lazier and lazier. Do you really want to stress people's brains all of this year long? Make things easy, right? So definitely Google Chrome.
Microsoft. Yeah, you know what? I would be very curious to do is to actually analyze their financial papers. Like maybe on paper they're actually making money. Maybe they've just decided to go with a model, yeah, that's not as sexy, but is making them the money that they want to make. That's what I'm curious about to learn.
I feel like Microsoft actually makes more money than Google does.
Okay.
That's what I think. I think
just that Google might be valued higher based on, I don't know.
Google is very big on marketing. And another thing that I know Google is really big on is education.
So
if Google is currently not making more than Microsoft, I'm of the opinion that they would at some point. They're growing rapidly, they're focused on education, and the thing about the education is that all of their educational materials speak directly to one or two of their product offerings. So they first use their marketing strategy is that they use the education to create demand, so you don't even know you have a problem.
You just said that, oh please, I only know how to use Google Analytics. I don't know all these other ones, let me just go and use the one that I've learned,
right?
Yeah,
now you do the course and then you realize that there is a knowledge gap, and then while you're learning to fill that knowledge gap, they are also now, they do a lot of onboarding with their with their courses. So you're now onboarding on their platform. Which means by the time you're done with the course, you just use their platform that you now want to just use it.
Oh, now you're also going to start learning one thing or the other. You'll be like, please, I already know this one. Yeah. Very interesting.
I've done like two courses with them. So, yeah.
Okay. They are,
like,
oh, which ones have you done?
Google Digital, Digital Marketer and E-commerce. That's one course. And then Google Project Management course.
Wait, you finished that course?
Yes, I did.
How long did it take you?
I wasn't working.
Okay.
It was the time when I had just resigned a job. I had some time on my hands. I was pregnant.
Okay.
I did it within 8 weeks.
Oh, wow. So you're one of the few that actually stays within. I feel like if you're trying to work and do a Google course,
it's draining.
And I'm saying from experience,
it's almost like you don't finish.
Honestly. Like, I think you need that kind of length of time where you're not really doing much.
Doing much, yes. But yeah, their courses are very informative.
I should definitely go back and finish that Google Data Analytics course. So God, I beg. All right. Okay, the next question. Would you rather put your phone on speaker or use earbuds? What's your go-to?
Okay. Because the type of things I say to my friends on the phone, they say the same type of things. And,
so that it is to stay content.
They are not for public consumption, because people just start the call. They don't even ask you, oh, how are you? Or oh, hello, my dear. Where are you now? Can you talk? They just...
Go straight into the meat of the matter.
Airport, unless I'm inside my bedroom.
Okay.
But ideally, I would rather answer a call on speaker. It just saves me the stress. But realistically, I don't.
Me, I'm a speaker person. And then it got to a point where even like my colleagues, when I'm in the office, they will be like, which kind of a person are you? Like, of course, I wouldn't have any private conversations then, but like, I just don't want to be holding my phone. And then before I can remove earbuds, put in my ear, you know, all those things. Oh, gosh. So funny. Okay. Next on Netflix or YouTube?
Netflix. Okay. I mean, Netflix and chill, babe, please.
Yeah. What are you watching?
Netflix on my phone.
Same.
Recently, I've been watching. What's the name of this? I went back to finish watching Vampire Diaries.
Oh, are you serious?
I watched it two different times. Oh,
wow.
I'm so obsessed with. I'm one of the people obsessed with Stefan.
Okay.
I'm not the demonic demon. Right. Okay. So I have a thing for. I'm an animal.
Yeah, he's like the gentle one, right?
He's very gentle, but I have something with repeating series. So I've watched Friends like maybe four or five times.
I meet Friends lovers. Yes.
I'm also watching Young Sheldon, which is like Sheldon's early life leading to Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. I finished it. I watch it all over again. I think I watched it all over again. Oh my God, I'm Friends. I can watch Friends every, like, I can watch it every day, please. Okay, I don't mind.
I don't mind
reciting the lines. The past
5 years.
Wow.
Gosh, I love Friends so much.
Yeah. I don't understand. I feel like if you don't like Friends, you're a serial killer. Quote me. Quote me. Because what do you mean you don't like it?
Don't you have friends?
I love Friends so much. Have you seen For Zelda?
Pod repeat for. Okay. Griselda, yes.
Okay. The what do you think?
It's amazing. Oh my gosh.
I didn't want it to end. I was like, why did they do such a thing like this?
I think it would have a sequel because that can be the end.
Honestly. And I feel like it's such a lovely way for... I feel like it's such a lovely way for Sofia Vergara to like branch out from every other thing she's been doing. I feel like it's just a perfect role for her. I really, really liked it. Please, Netflix, I beg. Season 2, 3, 4, 5, please. I want to know what was happening to her in prison. It's okay, I can watch her prison diary.
Because she's going to go there and she's going to rule.
Do you get? Like she's not the kind of person that just be quiet and...
She's going to give that prison break / Orange is the New Black vibes. I want to watch it.
Yeah, honestly. I really loved it. Okay, next. What would you say you've seen... what would you say has been more effective in today's day and age, digital marketing or traditional advertising?
Digital marketing.
Okay.
Just for the sake of exponential growth, you're speaking to multiple people at the same time. So for me, I would always say that the core of traditional marketing is word of mouth, right? That is the core. That has proven over centuries to be the most effective. Mm-hmm. Now, when you incorporate that into digital marketing, it's the same results, right? And that is why with digital marketing, most times, especially when done well, the most effective is affiliate marketing, because it is based, the foundation of affiliate marketing is word of mouth marketing. So you're telling your friend is telling his friend is telling his friend.
Friend,
you
know,
all of that just keeps going. So digital marketing, or if we can incorporate the principles in traditional marketing, digital marketing, all the way.
Love it. So, but there's something a discourse I've seen around digital marketing where it seems like, yes, when there isn't a good synergy between marketing and like product management or like the product end of the product, where it seems like you're driving conversion so into the product, you're driving people to actually try the product out, sign up and all that, but those customers end up dropping off at some point during the usage of the product. I don't know, have you experienced that? What's your like thought process around that?
I think really that is where community building comes in, because it's not enough for me to talk to my friend about it, right? Now, what is the customer success doing to maintain that relationship? How is communication going? What are the communication channels? You know, a lot of people, it's really a lot of marketers, they tend to focus solely on conversion, right? Okay. Forgetting that there are actually four touch points. There are four funnels when it comes to marketing, from awareness, when they get to know the product, to consideration, when they are looking at you versus your competitors, right? That's where you do the most explaining, the most follow-up. And then for a lot of marketers, we've converted, so we've generated a bit of income, so that's fine. And really, that is just conversion. Now, right after conversion, there is loyalty, right? Now, loyalty is hard, but subsequently, that is the basis of business sustainability, right? So it's not enough to constantly acquire. You have to maintain the people you have. Else, you're not having growth if they keep dropping off. And how can you maintain those people? Now, in the digital age, it is more difficult to have personal relationships with customers. And that's where the customer success strategy and workflow comes in, where you're making sure that every single communication loophole is taken care of, right? And then community building. The aim of communities is not for conversion. It's actually for loyalty. So what culture are you building within that community? There are people that do this TV series type of thing where, you know how in MTA, we all know, even till now, that 8 p.m. on Thursday is super story.
Everybody knows that. Yeah.
We know when Tales by Moonlight is, right? All of that. So what strategy are you using? Community building is very hard, very strenuous, takes a lot of time. Building in culture with adults is hard. But if you can consistently do it over time, you create a strong community. So the aim of a community is constantly create, you know, conversation and engagement. Now, in that case, they have bought from you. What are you giving them back in return aside from your product? Right. So if, for example, it's an e-commerce industry, are you doing webinars? Are you giving out free ebooks? Are you getting, you know, people that they look up to in business to come and speak to them free of charge? Yeah. Are you connecting them to communities where they can get business grants? Right. So we're saying, oh, today is advert day. So today we're opening the community up. You know, come out, make a video, pitch your product, right? Oh, today is partnership day. Who can you cross-sell with here? Oh, today we're bringing this person on, you know, to come and talk to you about this. So every Wednesday is webinar day. Over time, people are going to be setting the alarms at 5 p.m.
This will be webinar.
We're doing webinar. I learned one or two that helped my business. I must attend, right? It did not happen the first webinar. It did not happen the second time. It probably did not happen the third time. But it is going to happen if you are consistent with it. Now, people are attached to your product, not because of the services, not because of whatever unique features you think you have in your product that your competitors probably have better, right? They are now emotionally attached. So sometimes the product is messing up. They are not as angry as they should be. They are calling you, but they are calm. Still, I'm having this issue. Is there any way you people can help me? They're still telling their friends that, I know that their product is not so wow. I know that this one you're using is better, but see what I gain here. See what I gain there. See what I gain there. So you're not just having return customers. You're having people who have become sort of like your pastors, right? Your evangelists. They are going out there. They don't even know that they are helping you recruit new. So over time, you realize that consideration and conversion gets easier when loyalty has been built within your current customer base. Right. So, yeah, I just feel like a lot of companies, because, you know, they want the fast results, they do not impute a lot of resources in customer loyalty. And I mean, at the end of the day, that pays the bills. That
keeps the business. And I think everything you said is so important, especially in a day and time and industries where, like, you hardly find an industry where there is a monopoly. Now, technology has made it so that almost anybody can create health tech products as far as they have in domain experience. Almost everybody can create fintech as far as they have domain experience, as far as they know what is PND, what is transfer, you know, all those things. So technology is available. The competition is stiff. It's almost like your 20 brands are fighting for one customer. Customers say, oh, will you people offer me free healthcare? What are you offering? The customer is even now bloated with options. It's so funny. And that, I think that is why loyalty is so important now. What do you think the role of branding is in this whole, how would I say, conversation? I know, like, that's not your niche, show. I know that's not your niche, but just based on your experience.
I think that that is really the problem. With marketing, the foundation of everything you're doing is in branding. Because in branding, you're seeing PR and you're seeing communications. It's the partnerships and, you know, the personal relationships that you get to build. It's the tone of your words, your billboards, your messages, your email newsletters, your social media captions. All of those things form the basis for your brand. So your brand is an empathic brand. There are certain keywords you could never go near. Leave it for people that are doing strong brand. It is not for you. Product-led growth, leave it for them. Let them use the link. You are empathic, Abby. Please, be using words like please. Be using words like dear, right? Speak to their emotions. Speak to people like you're speaking to your friend. Mm-hmm. Like they're there. Let them create a tone when they are reading your messages, right? And that is really branding. And that's what forms the connection. And that's why I said, especially within the digital age and digital space, it is more difficult because people are not hearing, they are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So their brains are going to translate things, right, however it wants to. So you really want to guide them, right? They need to know that this is this brand's persona. These ones, they are playful. These ones, they're empathic. These ones, they're just very professional. They are bougie, right? So that also now informs brand loyalty. Because if you're using lingos of somebody who works in a law tech firm, I'm not going to patronize your product because I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not your customer then. Please,
your brand is what will attract me.
Right?
Your brand is what will keep me.
Your
brand is the reason why I will decide, do I want to be loyal with you or do I want to go and test some other products and choose who to be loyal to? So at the end of the day, starting from awareness, there's branding for the awareness funnel, right? There's branding for the consideration. There's branding for conversion. There's branding for loyalty. Because through all of this, you're doing a lot of PR. You're doing a lot of communication. So branding just goes straight from the top down to the end, right? So there's nothing like, oh, your marketing is not really your niche. You must know branding. There might be a branding specialist in the company that would help to refine, but you must know the basics because that forms the foundation for even your job as like a growth marketer or whatever. So yeah, branding is 100% part of the job.
Very interesting. Now I know, I feel like we've gone deep into the topic and I didn't even let you introduce yourself because we're supposed to go from the icebreaker to, you know, introducing yourself. So let me just take a step back, Tochi. Now that we've heard, we can clearly see how brilliant you are. We've heard your perspective on these topics that we started discussing. But could you please share a bit about yourself, your background, and your current role?
Okay. My name is Tochukwu Odonwa in full, but everybody calls me Tochi. I am a marketing manager. I've been a product marketing manager for about 6 years, heading to seven. And I have had the opportunity to work in e-commerce, a bit in edtech, Web3 fintech, and then data AI. Now, over the course of my career, I have honed skills in go-to-market strategy, planning and execution, being that I've been in quite a number of startups, so building a lot of structure, you know, and all of that. And I have been able to do this through a combination of education, research, and hands-on experience. So there has been a lot of learning and a lot of unlearning and relearning, you know, in this process. I have been able to create market structures and processes in really scrappy startups where I've had to like build teams and customer bases from scratch. So literally going from zero to one, you know, one to 10, you know, and then transitioning into like growth roles. This has translated into substantial revenue growth for the brands that I have had the opportunity to work with. My ability to handle complex challenges and prioritize projects has really been my secret to getting things done, because it's not enough to plan. Right, you have to be able to prioritize, and with marketing you're doing a lot of things at the same time, so you have to be able to multitask and to prioritize effectively for it to work. And really that is what has been able to set me apart in my field. My project management skills also, I feel it was, I really learned it when I dabbled into software product management, and I had to handle like engineering teams, marketing, engineering teams, product teams, quality assurance. You know, I had to have a lot of conversations with the marketing team. And when you're handling multiple teams like that, you have to be strong with project management, right? And that has helped. That was my major transferable skill into marketing, being that I've had to handle webinars, I've had to handle events, I've had to handle product launches, and, you know, all of that. So at the beginning of my career, fun fact, I did not study marketing in school, so I don't come from a traditional business background. Yeah. I studied medical biochemistry.
Yeah.
I have a master's degree in medical and pharmaceutical biochemistry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while at that, I got a job at a company, Anop Consortium, specifically working as an IT project manager on the Zonox brand, right, which was a subsidiary. So this was an e-commerce energy product company where they were manufacturing engine oils and all of that. Okay. So it was a B2B company. And having to work with engineering and design to help build the website and to serve customers better, being that our target audience were people who were literally in the market, big men in the market, who are using Touchlight. And who we're trying to get to, please, sir, just order on the website.
They'll be like, which one is that one?
What is that? Right. So we built this very, very complicated product, and it didn't penetrate the market. We had to pull back, we had to do user interviews, customer interviews, and then we had to now break down things and build something that was simpler, you know. And we did a lot of like onboarding and customer success in between to be able to successfully penetrate the market. So now, straight from Anop and Zonox, I was able to get into IM Mastery Academy, which was EdTech, as head of affiliate markets for Sub-Saharan Africa, where we're able to penetrate Nigeria, Kenya, South Africa, and Ghana. You know, that was a lot of events. The strategy was events, word of mouth marketing. So a lot of events every week, webinars, every month, events in one place or the other. Yes. So we're able to generate about $500,000 in 2021, which helped it increase the company increased by 30%. The annual recurring revenue for 2021 increased by 30%.
In 1 year,
Yes, just from these four countries, right? Then straight from there, I got into Gradient 5, which is a Web3 fintech company. Mm-hmm. It was a startup, and I was there pre-launch, right? So there was a lot of creating structure, right? I needed to create structure, stabilize things with marketing before we went into the market. So a lot of research, a lot of pulling back, coming back again, pricing strategy. The research said this, the data said that, you know. So I didn't stay a lot of time. I didn't spend a lot of time with Gradient 5, but I went straight from there to EDAI as a part-time consultant marketing lead. EDAI is a data and AI company in the economic development space. So think Deloitte, think KPMG, right? Okay. So they do a lot of research. So they work with a lot of location-related data. So let's say Amazon wants to establish in Nigeria. They're in the US. They don't know a lot of people. And there isn't a lot of, you would have to do like thousands of hours of work to get all the information you need, from taxes to how many human resources are there, you know, all of those things. Now imagine having a data system where you impute the location, you impute your parameters. We're trying to see resources for tax, resources for community help, government help, human help, all of that. You insert it as your data, and then the AI does the work for you in a couple of minutes and gives you all the data. Yeah, it gives you all the data you need to decide if that is a great location for your company to relocate to and actually make money and actually grow, right? So that just saves companies like a lot of money. So I'm still with them, you know, just 10 hours a week, so it's not actually a lot. Now, in addition to that, I am also consultant for My Shop Launcher. It's an e-commerce platform focused on creating free e-commerce stores for SMEs within Africa. We launched on the 25th of January.
Okay.
And today is 28th of February.
Yeah, it's been over a month.
It's been a month and 3 days. And we've successfully onboarded about 8,700 merchants on our platform.
That's money. I'm hearing dollar signs.
It's plenty.
Yeah.
It's been extremely intense, right? But it's been worth it.
Okay.
Not a lot of times do you get the opportunity to have that level of success 1 month post launch.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows very great product market fit.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that we're doing something right.
Yeah.
Recently, I also came on board as consultant for an edtech company called Decagon Institute.
Wow.
Where I'm currently the senior growth consultant.
Mm-hmm.
So edtech company providing, you know, education to people who want to pivot into tech, specifically software engineering. So they offer courses in Node.js, you know, in C++ and Java, right? And it's been amazing here. I've been here for less than 2 weeks. So yeah, still, you know, trying to get around the groups and all of that and hoping for big things to happen. So that is all that has been happening in my career in the past 6+ years.
That's amazing. That's so amazing. Yeah. I love how detailed you were with this. I have a question that just came up now in my mind.
Mm.
How important is domain experience in like taking up a marketing role, like in knowing that industry? Because you've mentioned like a couple of industries that you've worked in. How important is it to have domain experience?
I feel like that ties directly to persons.
Okay.
That's really personalities. I have a friend who is head of PR and comms, right, in the AgTech company.
Okay.
Right. I know somebody who does growth in an immigration education tech company. So there are people that will tell you that I want to be niched up in fintech.
Okay.
I want to be niched up in edtech.
Okay.
However, long term, right, you don't want to limit yourself to one industry.
Okay.
I'm of the opinion that you should understand the dynamics of different work industries. And the reason is this. The fact that you're niched up in edtech does not mean that you're not going to have to do partnerships with people, maybe even in agtech.
Okay.
And if you don't have, you know, a little bit of insight, it's like meeting something completely new. The mm-hmm. one thing that being in different sectors has taught me is to think outside the box,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'm in an edtech company, and I'm looking at it as this is a digital product, right? It can be, to generate leads, we can actually incorporate something that makes it sort of seem like an e-commerce product. So how can we integrate something in e-commerce to be able to fill in our funnel?
Mm-hmm.
Right, because if it's a digital product, then it can be sold online.
Yeah, B.
Or if I'm not in e-commerce, I might not really know that, okay, with e-commerce, you need to have like a payment gateway, you need to have this, you need to have that. There's a completely different user journey story. But because I know, now I'm thinking, where can this be put in and it works? How can I have a unique perspective? And then with marketing itself, Ibrodo, only digital marketing. There's performance marketing. There's normal digital marketing where you're doing social media. There is community management. There's copywriting. There's affiliate marketing. It's a lot, right?
E-plenty.
There are so many niches. But to be able to grow and grow exponentially, have experience with 2 to 3 sectors, and then know all the basics about the different types of marketing, then choose maybe 1 or 2 to be king in. Like for me, it's my number one is strategy, right? Project management. I will plan the strategy end to end. I will read the data and I know what to predict that would happen next. So I know where to position. So first for me is strategy. And then the next thing for me would be events. anything that has to do with a lot of PR and communications events, I'm great with that, right? So with the sector and with marketing itself, it's great to niche up, but don't limit yourself. Know everything, small, so you go fast. So yeah.
I love that perspective, actually. And I think what makes it even like more important now in like today's day and age, basically, is I've been hearing, you know, this thing where they're saying this is the year of like partnerships, right? This is the year mm-hmm. where it's not about competition. It's about building an industry that's strong enough to achieve certain things and give the customers what they need, you know? So I think it's really interesting, like you're saying, for everyone to have experience in different domains so that, for instance, if you have to partner with, you know, another domain, another company that's in a different domain, then you have that knowledge, you know, where you can say, okay, yes, I have experience working in edtech and I can bring this to the table. So I think that's very interesting. You know, so would you say this is one of your superpowers? I know you mentioned initially that project management is one key skill that has been transferable throughout your career. Would you say that's your superpower, or what would you say is your superpower?
Yes, I think project management is my superpower because it takes a lot of multitasking. So if you're doing multiple things at the same time, you're fitting a lot of puzzles to create a piece. Right, I love the adrenaline rush that comes with that. Right, so I also think that is really why I'm in marketing. I love that every day it's something new, it's something exciting, it's you thinking outside the box. So definitely, project management is my superpower in marketing.
Amazing. And then reflecting on your career, what would you say have been the like most significant milestones, the things that have gotten you to where you are today? I know when we talked last, you talked about, you know, building a network, you know, where there's trust in your, you know, previous roles, and then the previous role where you had to build the internal structure and then, you know, set the foundation before launch, you know, just right before launch when everybody's trying to go, and you're saying, hey, let's come back, you know. So what would you say have been like the most significant achievements, or like the things that have brought you to where you are in your career?
Well, I wouldn't say that it is necessarily one thing, but I would say that for each company, for each place that I've been in, there has been something that has been like my major milestone, my major turning point in that particular company. So I would start with when I really got into marketing full-time, which was in IM Academy. Now with IM Academy, it was market repenetration, right? The product had sort of like a pullback with the sole purpose of generating positive PR and developing trust with users. Being that, you know, because it had been pulled back, there were a lot of, you know, talk online, a lot of videos even on YouTube saying, oh, this company is a scam and it's this and it's that. In reality, it was compliance issues. And the company was dignified enough to have pulled back the product, taking care of the issues before relaunching, right? But I mean, that's not what customers experienced, right? So for them, it was just getting to the market and, you know, we were this and we were that before, and we had this money. And I told them, see, you have to build the basics. You have to change the narrative. You have to trample these reviews about you online. So for that, I would say that, you know, with changing that, taking a lot of time to create a positive PR and footprint that helped to set right the brand persona, you know, in the eyes of our target audience, was really what helped us to skyrocket when we now started looking at growth and generating income. Now, we used literally the whole of 2020 to do that. We're doing a lot of PR throughout 2020 and even the beginning of 2021. So for me, it wasn't surprising when within two quarters in 2021, we were able to get to generate $500,000, right? And that was because we had to pull back and we had to set that PR right. Now, with Radiant Phi, it was just establishing internal structure. There was no structure, documentation, all of that. Now, because we had a team that couldn't solely focus on one target audience. It was kind of difficult. We were focusing on two completely opposite demographics. One set were digital nomads who were really educated and technology inclined, and the other set were BDCs, right? People who probably, some of them maybe just ended in primary six, some of them are speaking, you know, their native tongues and all of that, and we still had to find a way to integrate them into our system to provide the foreign currency that our digital nomads needed. So sort of providing that internal structure, understanding that, oh, the brand persona we are giving to these people is not the brand persona that these ones are supposed to see. And trying to balance that out, it was a bit of a struggle, but we were able to do it. And that took a lot of internal change management, changing the way people were seeing the brand and understanding that we were two-faced, right? And that this face is not the same with this face, right? And just trying to balance that out. Now, with EDAI, it was more of creating a flow and a culture. They were not facing the people that they should face. The product was great, amazing, indigenous, but it wasn't getting the audience that it should get, right? So it was a repositioning issue. It was a branding issue, but specifically to reposition and face the people that we were facing, that we're supposed to face, right? And by the time we were able to, now this had to do with from the hashtags we were using to the sponsored ads that we were running, the campaigns that we were running, trying to understand our user demographic. And by the time we tested around different things, different theories, and we got it right, we were able, within a space of 9 months, to hit a 50% increase in customer acquisition. So we closed 2023 in profit as a startup that launched in 2023, right? Because I joined just like a few months post-launch. Right now, with my shop launcher, the target was to move fast and penetrate fast. Nothing sells more than emotions when you want to move fast and penetrate fast. And the e-commerce sector is not fully, how would I say it? There's a lot of competition. It's not fully saturated, but it's a bit saturated, right? So trying to give people what they do not currently have in the market, right? So there are three places that I look at to consider to weigh what my angle with marketing should be. So there's this marketing triangle where they tell you to consider three things when branding. You're considering the product, you're considering the price, and you're considering the customer success. So now, everything is supposed to be at least to industry standard, and then you're supposed to be above average in one thing, and that should be your message, right? So if we want to be product-led, we have to be giving something that nobody is giving. We have to be the most innovative. We have to be unicorns. In this stage, who are not? Were we up to standard when I first came in? No. Were we able to get up to industry standard? Yes. So as far as I was concerned, being basic was fine, right? We're not looking at being product-led. People have been product-led. There was WooCommerce, there was Shopify. Let's not go for the big guns. They've taken that. In terms of pricing, can we afford to be the cheapest in the market? Pricing strategy. If we're the cheapest in the market, if we're going lower than every other person, can that sustain us to be in profit? We did our research, and the answer was no.
No for most people.
Like, no for most people.
Competing on price is like...
Look at inflation now.
Yes,
inflation alone should tell you that your problem right now is not price.
It's not, yeah.
Right. By the time you consider the macro and microeconomic factors, you will just hands up. You don't even need to think too much, right? So what we did was, at least we are one of the industry bare minimums. One of the cheapest options. But not completely the cheapest option. And that is fine. We're up to industry standard there. Let's leave that one. So now we have just customer facing. How many of our competitors are emotive enough? How many of them care about the customers genuinely, beyond the product, beyond the money that they are making? And I said, look, let us empower SMEs in Africa. How can we do that? A lot of these people get into businesses, not because they studied a business-related course, but because of hardship, because they need to make ends meet. So they are struggling. They are trying to figure out, how can I place a structure? How can I learn pricing strategy? How can I learn marketing? How can I learn digital ads? You know, let us teach them that. Let customer success be patient with them. Let our messaging be to help them, right? So that was what we focused on. So hence the rapid growth within 1 month post-launch, where, you know, because at every point, the target is always be there. Customer success, always be in the community, always answer questions, always apologize for everything. The customer is always right. If they say their app is not loading, maybe it's loading on your phone, but maybe he said it's not loading. Say sorry first. Oh, we're so sorry. At the end of the call, tell them, we are here for you. We have a community. We are teaching this. We are. Do you know about this? Oh, we have a webinar. We were going to teach you this, right? So that has been the strategy with that. So for every industry I get into, I try to place in, you know, one of these triangles, right? For IM, it was product. We were very product-led. Great, amazing, innovative product. And that worked. For Grade N5, trying to find that balance, it was also product, right? We were trying to give something that not a lot of people were giving in the fintech space. For EDAI, it was also product because it was AI. But for MSL, it's been customer. We are very customer facing. So yeah, that has been it for, you know, for company that I've been.
I love that. I love how your strategy for each one is not, you're not just giving a one strategy fits all. You're actually creating a strategy based on the markets, based on the customers, based on what the business is capable of doing. I love it. I love it. Like, I feel like you've summarized everything, all the perspectives that someone in your shoes, a growth marketing, a growth product marketer needs to have, like, in their thought process at every point in time. Very interesting. So the topic we actually wanted to discuss today is around the unpredictable realities of market penetration. And I think that this is something that Tochi is very, very, very passionate about. And I, as we can see, based on her experience, she has had to adapt a strategy to every single role that she has taken up, based on even at what stage of, you know, the product that organization is. So Tochi, I'll have to ask you a question now, right? What would you say are like the major determining factors for the kind of strategy that you would put in place for an organization? You just joined an organization. What are the things you do before you say, okay, we can start working on a strategy?
The first thing that I like to do is an audit. If it's a startup, then there isn't so much of an audit in terms of historical data. So now we're doing an audit based on case studies. What have competition been doing and what has worked? So by the time I do that competitive analysis, the next thing that I'm looking at is an audit of the product. What do you want me to go and sell in the market? Can I know the nitty-gritties? What are the customers seeing? Then what are we seeing from the back end? Are there loopholes to be filled first? So can we fill those before we go to market, right? The thing, realistically, you can never completely fill all the loopholes until you start getting customer feedback. And that is where I like to do soft launches. So you're just bringing a sample size. You want them to experience it first and criticize you. It does not mean that when you finally launch, you will not still have things, loopholes to fill, but it would be less. And the soft launch will prepare you. If you just go to market thinking from inside, oh, I'm seeing it all, most likely it will pack up. Most of the time it will. So after the audit of, you know, what is in this industry, I want to do an internal audit of what we have in hand. And then that now helps me to, as I said, the triangle, that helps me to now decide where I want to place this product. Is it mind-blowing? If it's product-led, then we are just looking at just telling people, this is what is making us innovative. this is how this thing works. So we're just looking at the product, right? If it is that we can offer this thing cheaper and still be in profit, which means that people are just having very exaggerated prices in this industry, then that is what we're going to focus on. We're telling you that, you know, get this done at maybe times three lower than you currently have it done. So we're doing a lot of, you can get this done for cheaper. You can get that done for cheaper. A lot of competition and infographics. And then it is customer facing. We're doing a lot of, what are our customers celebrating this week? Is it Easter? We need to post about Easter. Is it International Women's Day? We need to do a video about International Women's Day, right? What are our customers in need of? Do we need to cross-sell with a company, right? Or do we need to get certain partnerships to just help to equip these people, to empower, right, these people? So all of these three sets of audits helps me to align whatever strategy I come up with the brand's mission and vision, to now understand how to now, you know, go to the customer and say, I beg, come and buy what we said. Please, we don't want to be hungry.
There's nothing I love more than someone who, before they make a decision, they've done so much research, they've done all the things you mentioned, the auditing, that's research. You are really looking into your organization, looking at, you know, what's missing, what do we need to do, what are we doing that we're not currently doing, you know, what have we done already. I think it's a fantastic perspective, and if there is nothing anyone takes away from this today, I think this is the only thing, I think this is a valid point, you know, starting out with an audit, starting out looking inwards. I love it. So we've talked about how, you know, it's been, there's different strategies that need to be put in place, you know, depending on what the situation is, right? What would you say has made the industry as we see it today so unpredictable? Like, what are those things that have contributed to this that we're seeing?
I would say there have been a lot of things. Okay. So the first thing would be competition.
Mm-hmm.
Competition has made things extremely unpredictable, right? So you're launching a product today, or you're planning your product launch for tomorrow. A week before, somebody comes up with something better than your product.
I don't know whether you will laugh or cry. Or
you don't know if you're pulling back, brother. You're saying, see, let's give up and go back to the village and just move on with our lives, right? And I have experienced that before. When we were trying to sign a pivotal partnership, 1 week two, the same company we were about to sign that partnership with signed our competitors. And this partnership was core marketing partnership, where they were supposed to help push the brand for people to get to know it. These people signed up. Just imagine waking up and you're seeing your competition, the people you're in talks with are now posting them. We just signed this. This is what they do. Even put their onboarding videos. Like, as far as putting onboarding video, wow. You know, so competition is very unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why you need to always be on your toes and assume that what you think you just came up with is a brilliant idea. Somebody came up with it 2 months ago, has planned it, has collected budget, and is going to execute it this night. So there is no time. Fast-paced. As you're thinking it, you're writing it down, you're documenting it, you're giving the end-to-end process. You have to be on the neck of finance. Every 1 hour, you'll be setting alarm, you're sending, please approve this, approve this. Once they approve, move to implementation immediately.
Immediately.
That's where handling multiple things, you know, comes in. Prioritizing the project, right, or the campaign that you're trying to, you know, get out there. Right. So Now, navigating these uncertainties, the truth is that sometimes you're just going to fall into trap. You cannot navigate all of them. So you have to be prepared for falling into the trap. So, but let's assume that, okay, all things being equal, usually my approach is to develop a marketing strategy that just revolves around a comprehensive framework that encompasses a lot of research and a lot of data analysis. No marketing strategy, even for two companies in the same niche, is 100% the same. Look for what makes yours stand apart, stand tall. Look for what makes it unique, right? And once you have that, you can move, right? So once I have that, I am able to now understand my target audience. I'm able to set clear objectives, right? This is what we are targeting. This is why we want to do this. These are the KPIs that we're monitoring. This is the projection that we're looking at getting. If our current strategy is not getting it, we are going back to the drawing board and we're deciding on what we are taking off and what we are adding. Now, by the time we constantly do that, we are constantly testing, even through the campaign, then we are able to, you know, mix and match channels. We are able to mix and match tactics and strategies. And we are constantly measuring, we are constantly optimizing. Over time, the marketing strategy will be successful, right? Now, adapting these strategies is like its own work, right? So you need to understand that for every strategy, I don't care if your product led, I don't care if your pricing is the best, you must be customer centric. You must appeal to the customer, right? So when it comes to market penetration, customer centricity approach is paramount. It helps to understand that target audience because that bases the foundation. And for me, the strategies to really understand that target audience lies in customer research, market research, you know, customer surveys and feedback loops, right? And then a lot of data analysis, right? So you're doing that pre-strategy. You're doing that during the strategy. You're doing that post-strategy so that informs your next campaign, right? So that data is going to feed into the next one for you to know what to adjust and what not to adjust. So for me, those are really the things that I put together when I'm trying to penetrate a market.
Fantastic. So you talked about how competition is one of the major drivers of unpredictability that we're seeing now, right? And I think earlier as well, we talked about how the fact that technology is advancing at such a rapid rate, those are the things driving the competition to be so high. And I love how you broke down the how you like develop a strategy, you know, for how you navigate these unpredictabilities. I know the last time we talked, you mentioned actually publishing something. Please, where are we on that?
My brain is so fast-paced right now.
Yeah.
Well, I am thinking about, I bought a microphone.
Okay.
So, I'm thinking, you know, just putting out random thoughts about stuff, you know. I could be doing a particular marketing campaign and I come up with, you know, some ideas that I can just put out there for maybe people starting up.
Okay.
Or even for, you know, companies, I could just, you know, talk about it. I can create something, downloadable PDFs, templates. A lot of complicated templates out there. It doesn't have to be so hard.
So complicated.
It can just be things you will do on your Excel sheet and your right? So putting out those ideas there, I am working towards it.
Okay.
I am.
We are waiting for your monthly newsletter, please. We are waiting. Avidly. We are waiting. I love that. Okay. So you also talked about customer centricity. And I think throughout the course of this conversation anyway, that's something that has been a major theme, right? Across all the places you worked with. understanding who your customers are is very essential for you to be able to create a strategy that works, right? So how do you now define the success of that strategy? What are the things you're looking at measuring? What are the KPIs that help you know that, okay, this has been successful?
For me, that depends on our objective, right? So there are different metrics and different KPIs for measuring the success of a campaign. Okay, so if, for example, we are looking at brand awareness, then maybe we're just going to be measuring KPIs like website landing page visits. Okay, so how many people came through to the website to see what we do and how we do it, right? Maybe we're looking at the number of publications that we have online and how many people were viewing these publications, okay? Because now that means that they are aware of the brand. If we're looking at revenue, then we are probably looking at when they landed on the site, did they make a purchase? Did they apply? Did they enter the web? Did they? Conversion can be different things. And that's also another thing. Conversion for some people might be, did they sign up? Right? So, for example, conversion in MSL for me is in two parts, in two phases. My first conversion is onboard merchants, sign them up. Now, after I sign them up, I'm now moving them to telesales and customer success to fully onboard them, right? When they are done onboarding them, my second conversion is push transactions. So there, I am now checking how much have we made? What is the volume of transactions, right? So that's why I said for some people, it is sign up. Because for some people, they are... their strategy is maybe they are trying to do maybe a freemium thing where people have their this in free for a certain amount of time before they move to paid customers. So at this time, are we just looking at free merchants? If we're just looking at free merchants, our metrics and KPI is on board, sign up, right? If we're looking at, you know, conversion in terms of pushing transactions, we're now looking at volume. How much can one person bring us? And now we're calculating cost per acquisition, right? How much did we spend in ads? What was the impression? All these people that came, how many of them signed up and did some? So when they sign up, we now know that, okay, for example, we acquired this merchant with 500 naira. How many transactions is this merchant going to have for us to make back 600 naira, which means that we've made a profit of 100 naira on this merchant. And we're seeing it and we're saying, okay, this merchant needs to do 6 transactions. Until those 6 transactions are complete, we have not converted, right? But if you're looking at it from the sign-up part, we've converted, right? So there is that. Then in terms of loyalty, that's when, you know, sometimes you could use an app and they say from a rate of 1 to 5, how likely are you to recommend us? That is a type of conversion metric for customer loyalty, right? So how many people can you tell about us? So if the metrics are high, people are saying, oh, I'll most likely recommend your product, maybe 4 stars, 5 stars, then you know that you're attaining business sustainability through loyalty. But if they are not, they're saying maybe 1, or you're having really bad reviews, they will most likely not recommend your brand. So the brand is converting, but in terms of loyalty, it is not converting, right? So especially for a lot of PR and comms people, usually the conversion that they are looking at, the metrics is awareness. So how many people got to know about us from this event that we went to, right? For consideration, it is how many people are requesting for a call, how many people are asking questions on our lines, how many people are getting on call with the telesales teams, right? In terms of
maybe checking your FAQs or sending messages
exactly,
to your
Yes, so you're looking at things like Clarity by Microsoft to see at what point in our user journey are we seeing more activity, or you're doing sort of like a heat map across your website and saying where is the hottest place, where are people going to the most, right? So we're using that to know that, okay, this is quite high, people are being aware. However, they're not going down the funnel to give us money or to sign, right? So conversion just, it varies down each funnel. So yeah.
Amazing, amazing, Tochi. Thank you so much. I feel like we're going to round up here very shortly. There's just one more thing I would really like from you before we go. I know you have given us about an hour of your time already. So what advice do you have for, you know, aspiring marketing professionals, people who maybe they're trying to get into this industry, they've seen some interest, you know, some things that interest them, they've listened to this podcast and they're like, this sounds like something that would be impactful, something that aligns with my skills, right? What would you advise them?
First of all, read. Marketing is not like every other field where they say, oh, experience is enough. Unfortunately, experience is not enough. You're going to read a lot. And, you know, sometimes you're reading, you're going to, you must not do a course. I know that scares people a lot. You're going to learn a lot, yes, by experience, especially with marketing, considering the fact that, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty, right? But also, you're going to have to be reading a lot of case studies, right? I follow a couple of LinkedIn pages where they post a lot of case studies. There's Pretty Little Marketer, there's Mad Over Marketing, you know. There's one that is even Nigerian, Brand and Communications Expert, right? So they go around and they look for like the most innovative marketing strategies that converted the most, right? A few days ago, I think on 23rd or so, Trump sold out something he launched that day. So he went for an event and he introduced a sneaker that he had designed or something, and he was able to sell out. So they were trying to sort of dissect, you know, his marketing strategy to being able to sell out. There are also a lot of marketing, you know, focused podcasts, right? So you're going to have to read about all of that, okay? And then you can also start by doing researches. So you could just, you know, get a company and you're like, let me research on their target audience. Understanding your target audience comes from a lot of practice, right? So conducting market researches, you know, go a long way in helping you to really master the art of marketing, because that just creates the foundation for whatever it is you want to do. Creating compelling content. A lot of people say, I'm not a writer. I don't know how to, you know, put the words together. If you need to take a course in creative writing, please do. But as a marketer, you must learn how to wield words. And you also have to learn how to be careful with words, because people are going to interpret however they deem fit. And you do not want to be on the wrong side of history because of the words that you put out there. So, you know, always practice it. Even if it's on your WhatsApp, you know, try to always come up with 3-4 lines. See how people are reacting to the things that you post. Do people tell you, you've not posted for 2 weeks, right? I've missed you. I have a lot of friends in my WhatsApp who say, I've not seen your post since, so that was why I called you to know if you're doing well, right? I miss your posts a lot, okay? Because I try to be like really conversational, and that helps to build my creative writing skills. Build a strong online presence. I know I am very guilty of this. I don't have any online presence. And thank you, Walola, for really pushing me to try to get an online presence. As I said, I have bought a microphone. You people will soon hear from me with my big microphone.
Hallelujah.
I bought that big one so that when I put it, people will know I've arrived, right? So building a strong online presence is key. Sometimes as a marketer, it drains you when you have to build an online presence for others. So you're too tired to build an online presence for yourself. That is actually the truth. right? Okay, I'm doing strategies for everybody.
Yeah.
I'm too burnt out to build a strategy for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a lot of marketers, you see a lot of their pages. It's not gen-gen. You see, they do a lot of things on the whim. They just make videos because they have spent all their energies being structured for the companies. They don't want to expend that energy on themselves, right? So focus on customer experience. Always talk to them. Ask them. If they are angry, hear from them. If they are happy, hear from them. That would help you to go back to engineering and tell them they don't like that feature, but they like this one, right? Data-driven marketing. Dashboards, please, companies, build us dashboards. We need to see our numbers. Yeah. We need to see where it's dropping so that we can figure out why it is dropping at that point. So data-driven marketing is a big deal. You have to know your mathematics. You have to be good with your percentages, your addition, your subtraction, right? Stay agile and Excel.
Excel.
You have to be able to sum and subtract and give commands to your colleagues, right? Data-driven marketing, I know we like to leave it for the data analysts, but that it shouldn't be so. Right, we should be able to build out the graphs and all of that. If it means, you know, you have to take like a basic course in data analysis, by all means. I took a course in SQL, took a course in in advanced Excel. I took a course in dashboard analysis, and the reason is that the numbers actually tell the stories without any form of emotion. And you need to be emotionless.
No sentiments, really, no bias.
No sentiments. This is what the numbers are saying, and this is what we have to do. That is what brings the results, right? So you're agile and adaptive. Have you seen the video of the 3D marketing that Noah's Ark marketing agency did with Multina, where the Multina can looks like it's falling out of the billboard? Right. So that has been going on for a while, like in the US for a couple of years. You know, Coca-Cola has done stuff like that abroad, you know, all of that. It's great that a company has finally started doing it in Nigeria. And I'm sure that Multina is currently experiencing a lot of, you know, retrenchment with their old customers. So what is the newest thing on board? Is it to dance on TikTok? Impute it to your strategy. Right. Is it to do podcasts? Impute it. Right, no pun intended. Please build strategic partnerships. Talk to everybody, talk to anybody, take numbers, speak to people, build a network. When the company needs this, who is in your contact that can deliver? Right, so that goes a long way with marketing. And then I've already talked about learning. So, what else? Be patient. It's hard, but it's fun. So be patient. It always just works out in the end. So yeah, that's all I have from the little knowledge that I've gathered in this short while. And I hope it helps somebody. So yeah.
That is so interesting, Tucci. So it's very obvious, Tucci, that you have a lot of knowledge and you've literally dissected everything. And I feel like anyone who listens to this is actually getting a lot of insights. And I like how you even shared, you know, like the blogs that, you know, people can listen to. So, and then, you know, how you emphasize how learning is extremely important. So I want to say that these are the last final words, but I know this is not. So I want to ask you for something that we know. I know we didn't discuss. Please tell us when we're going to have our online presence. Just tell us when we're going to hear your voice on podcast, because I want you to make a promise so that you will do it, so that people can continue to learn from you.
Okay, now that's the thing. I'm trying to create two different pages.
Okay.
One was something that was coming constantly as a prompt to do. And I did start it, but I stopped because I did not really understand where I was going to. I did not discuss this personally with you, but between the time that we did the first podcast recording and now, I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease that majorly affects women. Don't worry, it's not a death sentence. I'm good. I'm good.
Okay. Oh, thank God. I'm so sorry. But,
no, that's fine. But when I created that community, the name is Hearts and Hormones. It was to
Hearts and educate
Hearts and Hormones.
Okay.
It was to help educate women specifically in Africa. There is a knowledge gap. A lot of pregnant women don't even know so much about pregnancy. And that is why there's still very high mortality rates within Africa. Mm. I've seen people that they don't even know how to calculate their EDDs. I've seen people that they don't even know what their menstrual cycle looks like. I've seen people that are visibly going through PCOS and they have no idea. I've seen people going through PMS and they have no idea. For me, I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, right? Which is a type of hypothyroidism, right? And I am currently in stage 5.
Is that good or bad or worse? So
it means that I have to live with it for the rest of my life. But
sorry.
I have to take drugs. Okay. But as far as I'm taking the drugs and I've changed my diet, I'm exercising as I should.
You already exercise so much.
That's the problem. I am not supposed to exercise so much. I wanted to give you that gist.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, I am not supposed to do any high intensity workouts so that I don't increase hormones like my cortisol, which is a stress hormone, or my adrenaline. So instead of running, I'm supposed to just walk.
Oh.
Right? So there's just a lot of, you know, things that I'm supposed to. And people go through these things. They're struggling with their weight. They're struggling with getting pregnant. They think that painful menstruation is normal. And it is not. Right? So I started Hearts and Hormones. And it was like something. There was something missing. And then I stopped. This thing was a prompting where I even started having an anxiety attack. I would dream and a man would just come up to me. And I thought it was just maybe the Holy Spirit prompting me and saying, you need to start this thing. You need to help it. You need to. And honestly, things just started going haywire in my life, right? In that period. The moment I launched the community, things started falling back in place. It did not make sense. And I had to pray. And I had to say, this thing, I don't understand it yet. When I got the diagnosis, the first thing my husband said to me was, Shebi, that makes sense why they told you to go and start community last year. You know, so I'm trying to sort of create a structure around that, do interviews for women who have gone through fibroids, ovarian cysts, PCOS, you know, record my journey so far with hypothyroidism, you know, and all of that. And also still be able to put out marketing related content. So,
and also take care of yourself, and also take care of your home, and also take care of your kids, and also do your MBA, and also work. It's a lot.
It's a lot. You get it now. So, in fact, I went, it was yesterday, I had to buy like a new journal, you know, and I am really trying to just write every single experience I'm having with my hormonal issues. I want to record everything. I just published maybe as a free ebook. I had to just title it Hashimoto's and Me. It's new. And I just want to record every single day.
Yeah.
What did I eat? Did it make me bloated? Did it make me feel better? You know, what exercise did I do? After 6 weeks, did I see a difference? How have I been able to regulate my sleep? Because it's been affecting all of those.
Oh, right.
So yeah, I just want to put it all down and then just, you know, send it out for women to just read through and it helps them. So before that, I also want to create sort of like a volunteer group, women who have gone through this. When you find out you have, when I found out, I was in shock. I could not cry. I could not tell anybody for days. In fact, my husband found out weeks later because I did not know how to say it to him. Right. And sometimes people find these things out. They have nobody to talk to who understands. So are there people who can put out phone lines there and someone can just call you up and say, I just found out about this and I just wanted to talk to somebody. Right. So I'm trying to create that structure. trying to get a couple of people on board to help out, even if it's just once a week. Talk to one or two people, make them feel better. Be a pregnant woman who is scared,
mm-hmm.
who is confused. Yeah. Just talk to her, uplift her, yeah. make her feel good. It could be a mom who just gave birth and she's feeling like, oh, I'm fat and I have stretch marks and I have sex. Show her your own and tell her, all of us have it.
You guess, my dear.
You're doing well, yeah. you're fine,
mm-hmm.
right? That is just what the community is about. So, you know, yeah. trying to build a structure around that is a lot. So I'm working on that. I'm working on using my microphone to talk about marketing. So most definitely, I should be able to have started. My birthday is April 16th, and I want to start before my birthday. So
yay! Before my birthday, we have a date. We have a date. I am so glad. Thank you so much for sharing so much of yourself about your personal life and even, you know, your work experience. I really appreciate it. Thank you for coming on the podcast, Tochi. It has been a time. So that wraps up another insightful episode of the Spotlight Podcast. A heartfelt thank you to Tochi for sharing your experiences and shedding light on the unpredictable realities of market penetration. Thank you so much, Tochi. And for our listeners, whether you are a seasoned professional or an aspiring entrepreneur, I hope you found today's episode as illuminating as I did. Until next time, my name is Iwalola Shobowale and
Tochi Odonwa. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Before you go, everyone that's listening, be sure to give us a rating and follow us on social media. And remember that in the unpredictable journey of business, every challenge is an opportunity for growth. Thank you. Thank you, Tochi.